Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, greetings to all of you along Florida's Space Coast, listening in on a very wintry day, and to all of you throughout the nation as you try to keep warm next to your computer, perhaps as you listen to us live online at WMMBAM.com. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the January 9th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Today, join me as usual by calling into the studio at 768-1240. AT&T wireless customers along Florida's Space Coast can dial *1240 to reach us with the free phone call. And, of course, from anywhere in the world, call us 321, the area code, 321-768-1240. Or send email to us if you're on the computer. Send it to spacetalking@AOL.com. It'll show up right here on our screen in the studio. And if you do call in, what should we talk about today? How about the weather? Well, if you're a regular listener, you know that I was born and raised in Minnesota. And if you have never had the treat to live or visit in that great state anytime from about mid-September to even up to late May, well, what you're experiencing today in Brevard County is just a gentle tease of what it's like up there for that incredible amount of time every year. Cold, gray, misty, a day today when you think a blizzard could start up at any moment. You know, it wasn't so bad earlier in the week. I think when it was just cold, you had the sunshine. You know, we could say we were still the sunshine state. We just didn't deliver on the warmth side of that promise. But today, absolutely dreary. Forget it. This is Florida, not Minnesota. And so it should be warm enough soon enough again, and we'll get back to some semblance of normalcy, whatever that may be. And today we have a guest with us who may be able to help tell us when that might happen. And I was thinking it is only January, and it's been cold here for about a week or so. And as I said a moment, you know, imagine this lasting for several months. And truly, in Minnesota, it just goes on and on and on. And that reminds me of what Garrison Keillor, the humorist, often says. He says about March in Minnesota. This is only January, folks. Imagine this every day nonstop for another 3 months. And you get to the end of March in Minnesota, and what Garrison said about March in Minnesota, he said, March in Minnesota is what God created to give those of us who don't drink a sense of what a hangover is like. And that could not be more descriptive. And so we get up today, we put on our layers, we put on our sweaters. I actually wore gloves driving into the studio this afternoon. It was just that cold out. And that's okay. That's normal. But it's not normal for us. And the mind is just not wrapped around this concept that it would be this cold all the time. And I think when you're born and raised and you live up north and you worked up north and if you're down here, you know what it's like. You know, you get used to it. You know, they just sort of, the thermostat goes down in September and then a little bit colder in October, and then the holidays kick in and you're wrapped up around it. But this kind of stuff out of nowhere, got to go. Well, we are going to talk some more about the weather today. In fact, in just a few moments, we're going to be joined by, from the Air Force, from the 45th Space Wing, the Space Shuttle Weather Officer, Kathy Winters, is here. We're going to talk about weather. We're going to talk about weather forecasting and the tools the 45th Space Wing uses to make sure it's safe for those rockets to go up. And we might even bring up that dreaded word we all learned a little bit ago, tribal electrification, the fake word that they just made up because they didn't want to launch that day. Well, no, it was a real thing, but we'll talk about that too. But before we get on to that, just a couple of updates on some things that are going on around the space community that I wanted to make sure that you were all aware of, at least for a little bit. First of all, Endeavour. Space Shuttle Endeavour is supposed to launch February 7th, but there has been an issue that's come up here in the last couple of days that could delay that launch. Everything is kind of it's up in the clouds right now, to tell you the truth. Endeavour is supposed to carry the last major big piece of hardware that the United States is contributing to the space station complex. It's called Tranquility. It's another one of these nodes that's supposed to go up, and it's got this cupola on the end of it, basically a cap with a bunch of windows, which is going to be really spectacular and great for them to have up there. Because of the way they have to assemble it on orbit and the way they have to put it onto one of the nodes and then eventually move it to a new place on the space station a little bit later, there was an issue with the coolant lines. There's ammonia that flows through the hardware to help keep it cool in orbit. And the way the lines are supposed to normally connect to the space station, they were off by about 90 degrees. And so they were going to have to install some jumpers, some jumper coolant lines from the space station to this node to help keep it cool while it stayed in sort of its temporary spot. Well, as it turns out, those connecting jumper ammonia lines ruptured during a pressure test not too long ago. And there's concern now about the lines that they're ready to install and carry up with them on Endeavour. So what are they going to do with the lines? Well, can they fly the lines as they are? The test was running pressures at a higher pressure. It's just that they ruptured at a lower pressure than they intended it to be. Still well above operational, normal operations. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know, is it still safe to fly as is? Is there a way to continue to launch this mission and do all the work and just not bring up the node to its full power so that it doesn't need as much cooling, so it doesn't have to rely so much on those lines to stay cool? Is the right solution totally replace everything, retest everything, take the few weeks and months to do that, and fly the shuttle missions out of sequence now and basically delay this flight and fly the other ones? Well, while that had been considered as an option, at least reported as an option by some news media, some of the folks that I've talked to and some of the folks that I trust in reading their stories made it pretty clear that Endeavour is going to stay out at the pad. They're going to fly us just as soon as they're able to. And then the question is, what are they going to do about these lines, and how soon can they get around to making a decision? The earliest we might hear something on that would be this Tuesday. But I think that's just the fact that that's when the next meeting is, the kind of meeting where they discuss these things. I don't think a decision exactly what they're going to do is going to come anytime really quick. But I do think they're going to continue to press ahead with Endeavour's launch. Now, whether it gets off the ground on the 7th or not, or a week later or 2 weeks later, don't know. And I wouldn't read too much into that either in terms of whether they're going to get all five launches off this year. I mean, there's a lot of, while the schedule's tight, at the same time, there's a lot of padding within the schedule. And as we've seen time and again, year after year, these Kennedy Space Center workers can work miracles when it comes time to the schedule and what they need to do out the pad to get these things ready to fly. So we'll stand by on that, see what happens with these cooling lines, see what happens with what NASA decides to do, and just know that Endeavour sits out at the pad now in good shape. By the way, the shuttle itself in excellent shape for launch. Again, let's call it no earlier than February 7th. By the way, should it fly on February 7th or any time in the next, couple of months after that, this right now, as you lay out the schedule, is going to be the last scheduled night launch of a space shuttle. So of the five remaining to fly, if you look at when they're tentatively all targeted to fly and you look at the launch windows, this is the last one where it's really officially nighttime, and should be spectacular. I know tickets at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex went on sale for this launch in terms of getting the up-close view. Not that you needed it a night launch. I mean, on a clear night, you can see this thing from just about anywhere in the state. But kind of exciting to think about it that way, and also another indication that that things are winding down for our space shuttle program. By the way, on Monday will be a safety stand-down day at NASA throughout the agency, and a good thing to do every year. Folks at Kennedy Space Center have taken a couple of weeks off here. Most of them have anyway. Do some annual maintenance, do some annual stand-down work. And coming back here now to kick off this final calendar year of space shuttle operations, they're going to take a safety stand-down day, sit down, take a deep breath, take a look at their safety programs, take a look at all that they're doing, and make sure they're right on top of it. And that's a good thing to do. It's a great idea, and we wish them well. So that's a quick update on what's going on. When we return, Kathy Winters from the Air Force, from the 45th Space Wing, will join us, and we'll talk about weather, and we'll talk about launches, and we'll hear from you at 768-1240. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And good afternoon, everybody. Jim Banky here on WMMB on Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. And today we're talking about weather. And the weather is pretty frightful outside today. And we did not plan it that way, of course. We've had Kathy on the dock here for a few weeks now, but and we're glad to have her with. But I wanted to just get into this by saying that I have been sensitive to the effects of weather on a launch since I was a very young child. And if you listened to our show a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, about model rocketry, and I told the story about my very first model rocket launch, and I will not retell it here in its entirety because it takes several minutes, but let's just suffice it to say, Kathy, that I lost my first model rocket because I was not patient and did not listen to myself because the winds were too high, and my dad said, don't launch, the winds are too high, and I said, I'm impatient, I've been waiting all year, my rocket has been sitting on my desk all through the winter, it's springtime in Minnesota, it's time to fly, launch fever set in, I launched it, the wind took it, into the woods, gone, never saw it again, and now those woods are a target and a parking lot and a shopping center, and I don't know whatever became of my Honest John rocket. But that is the importance, folks, of weather, because if you launch when it's not time for the weather, your rocket doesn't fly, and that's as true with the little plastic thing as it is 400-foot, 300-foot tall Ares 1X, I suppose. So anyway, well, we welcome Kathy Winters. Kathy is Shuttle Launch Weather Officer for the 45th Space Wing, 45th Weather Squadron, Civilian Air Force. Let's see. I'm looking at your notes here. I've been around since February of 2002 in that particular job. You're a Floridian, a native Floridian, born and raised in Miami. And tell us a little bit about yourself. Welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me to the show. I really appreciate it.
It's going to be fun. Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, how do you get to where you are today, first of all, with that background, that personal information? How do you... I mean, the weather down in Miami, not that exciting
right.
Every day. You know, the weather forecast pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's beautiful down there. And, of course, I grew up down there, so it's nice and warm. And I really actually didn't know I was going to do weather until later on. And as I grew up, I really was interested more in going into the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very interested in computers and mathematics. And so what I ended up doing was getting a degree in math. And I was in the Air Force ROTC program at University of Central Florida. And as I was doing that, I was looking at the different career fields within the Air Force, and meteorology was one of the ones that was offered. And I really wanted to make sure I used my degree in math and my minor in computer science.
Mm-hmm.
And that I knew I could do that in this career field. So I started looking into it. I actually came over to Patrick Air Force Base to find out more. And I ran into the squadron commander here, which at the time was John Madera, who now works at the KSC
sure.
Weather Office.
Great guy.
Yeah. And he gave me a tour. And by the time I left, I was totally pumped. To be in the Air Force as a weather officer. So went back and changed my career field choice, and because of my degree, I was able to get into that career field.
And one thing leads to another, and then you're here at the Cape.
Right. So I always tell John if he doesn't like what I'm doing, it's all his fault, because it's his fault I'm a meteorologist.
That's good. He should take the blame. He'd take the credit, too. So you're here now, and I also just want to know, for the record, you're an Embry-Riddle graduate as well, as I am. You have your Master's of Science there.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's very cool. I'm going to work on my Master's one day, as soon as the rest of the kids get through school first. So now talk about the 45th Weather Squadron. Give us the big picture kind of, you know, we hear specific, kind of very specifics. You're on the hot seat. We'll get to that in a minute. But in general, the 45th Weather Squadron, what do you do? Who are you?
Right. We are a group of about 33 people. We have about 20 military and 13 civilians working at the Weather Squadron across both Patrick Air Force Base and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station.
Mm-hmm.
And we support launch operations, ground operations. We do resource protection and also the launch operations. We also have a side of our squadron that is making sure all of our equipment is current and they're always working on the procurement and sustainment of our equipment that we use to help launch.
So, and get into that. I mean, I've been into the room a few times, and it seems every time I'm in there, there's another console giving you another tool, giving you another insight into the weather you didn't have before. I mean, go right down the list. What do you got?
We have a couple of radars, weather radars that we have access to. We also have our lightning detection systems. We have both cloud-to-ground and in-cloud lightning detection systems. We have a set of field mills, about a little bit over 30 field modes that spread across the range that we have access to the data. We can tell the electrostatic potential of the atmosphere with those that help us determine triggered lightning threats during launch. We also have about 40 weather towers across both KSC and the Cape that are instrumented at different levels so that we can get winds at multiple levels at all the different towers, and also temperatures, relative humidity, all kinds of weather data from those towers. And then we have a system that brings in all that data and integrates it all into our consoles there where we are doing our resource protection and forecasting.
Now, how much of that, when that data comes in, how much of that do you have to sort of crunch in your head versus it tells you green or red?
Well, it's a little bit of both. There's a lot of both, I guess you could say. We actually, on a launch day, we have a team of people that are looking at different information. We have somebody that's purely monitoring the radar. We have a launch weather officer talking to our aircraft that's up in the air providing information. And everyone on the team has a role, and that helps us manage all the different things that we're having to manage, basically, as we come to a decision. Anybody goes red of the launch weather officers are certified, then we go red. And then we all have to come to consensus to go back to green.
Okay. So, and one of the things I kind of wanted to help emphasize here, too, is we know your work on launch day and during the countdown, but, I mean, I think you're using the terms resource protection.
Right.
But, you know, you're out there every day supporting operations because stages have to be lifted, cargo has to be moved around, large vehicles have to be moved, people have to get from office to office, so we're always hearing about lightning warnings and whatnot. And that's all coming out of your office.
That's absolutely correct. We have to do weather operations every day. It's not just for launch. There's so much preparation coming to launch. There's people working out on launch pads. We have ground operations. We have stacking operations, lifting. Of course, we have for shuttle, we have rolling the vehicle out. We have the external tank barge that goes back and forth between the Cape and up to Michoud up in Louisiana. So there's a lot of different elements of the weather support that we do in the weather squadron.
And I know I also want to introduce the Spaceflight Meteorology Group is another group we hear about. And it used to be maybe even before your time. I don't know what it's like really right now. But, you know, there used to be we had to be very clear as to who was saying what. And I think some of that might have been a little, you know, intercentral rivalry and whatnot that comes into play here. But it was very specific. We knew what SMG was saying. We knew what the weather squadron was saying. Now I think you're all one big happy family, basically, is what I'm getting at. But they also do a piece of this, too, with the landing requirements. And that's, you support them, or do they do it all on their own? How does that?
No, we work together. They do all the abort landing weather, so they do the overseas landing sites. We have abort landing sites in the U.S., and one of them is Kennedy Space Center. I'm doing launch weather at Kennedy Space Center, so we talk when we're coming up to launch. We actually have scheduled times that we call. We coordinate our forecasts. I go out there and visit them so that I get to know them well, and we've built up a really good rapport. And so when we come to launch day or coming up to launch day, we've talked quite a bit, coordinated all the forecasts that we issue, and the probability that I issue for KSU weather prohibiting launch is a probability that does include that return to launch site weather at the shuttle landing facility. And so they have a say in that probability. So we all work together as a team.
Yeah, because it seemed to me, I remember days when we used to say the weather was, you know, 90% go, and then suddenly it would be no go, and everyone would look around scratching their heads, and it was because the runway wasn't clear.
Right.
You know, but now that number seems to be, you've worked a formula. And that must be an incredible formula because, again, how do you determine odds? You know, I mean, and we as media, when I used to be frontline journalism, and certainly the guys now, you know, we hang our hat on that number because I guess it's the only other number we can relate to. You know, there's a 60% chance of go. Well, we can all relate to that number. But how do you determine 60-40 versus 40-60?
Right.
You know, and what tells you, you know, when it's absolutely no go or when it's totally 100% go?
Right. It's really hard to go solid, totally go or no go 3-4 days out. You know, once we start getting down to launch time, down to T0, you can get to 100% or 0%.
Right.
But before that, it's very rare that we would do that because, you know, there's always something that can kind of burn you near the end. But we do have climatology that helps us. But in the end, a number really does become subjective. But the way I like to think of it is if we had 10 days where we have the same weather situation, how many of those days would be red or how many of those days would be green? And that's how I kind of pick my probability. 7 out of 10 would be red, we'd be 70%.
Okay.
It's one way to think about
it. So it's not like, say, you know, if you've got criteria of lightning, triggered lightning, precipitation, winds, visibility, if the visibility is no go, that automatically takes away 10%. And then if the clouds are no-go, that amount takes away another 20%. Now you're up to 70%.
Yeah, no, it's not exactly
it's
like
not quite
that. It's just
clean
really
as
more,
that.
What's the threshold? Is it crossing the threshold? And if it's one phenomenon, it might still make you 100% no-go if we know it's going to be out of the limits.
Now, I have seen very rarely, but more recently, 100% no-go in advance. And I've seen it's certainly more on the commercial side, a willingness to shut down early. I think NASA has tended to be more, if we even have a shot at it, let's go for it, you know. But on the other hand, I've almost never seen you say 100% go.
Right.
And the joke is, you know, that you won't say that. You'll go to 95 because you don't want to jinx it.
Well, I guess we joke around about that a little bit. But in reality, we know that there's always something, especially with shuttle. And it may seem more that way with shuttle because you have that ceiling constraint and those clouds can float in. It can look like a really nice day, but you get a little bit more of the 50% coverage of clouds over the SLF, and you're no go. So that's really why we don't go down to zero. Although we do joke around about it occasionally.
Well, that's, and we joke about it a lot on the other side too. Let me tell you. Well, we're gonna take our 5-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour. When we return, we'll have more with Kathy Winters, Shuttle Weather Officer from the 45th Space Wing. And we hope your phone calls and questions and comments, 768-1240. In the meantime, I'm Jim Banky. This is WMMB, and you're listening to Space Talk.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Brought to you by United Space Alliance, 321-768-1240, *1240 for AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast, spacetalking@aol.com on the email, follow us on Twitter at spacetalking. All of those ways will let you clue in on what's going on and give you a chance to participate in the show anytime. I want to remind you that Space Talk can be heard live online right now at WMMBAM.com. And each week, a recording of today's show is available as a podcast to download again at WMMBAM.com. 45th Space Wing, 45th Weather Squadron, Shuttle Weather Officer Kathy Winters is our guest today. And Kathy, before we get back to you, I just wanted to take a moment to answer a question. A couple of questions have come in on the email. The first one, Lisa Chan. Lisa, a fellow Minnesotan, she says, remind everybody how beautiful it is after a fresh fallen snow in Minnesota. And there's no doubt it's absolutely beautiful. That white outdoors is just absolutely gorgeous when the snow falls. And it's wonderful and it's to die for, to be there until you have to shovel it. And then you shovel your driveway and then you warm up the car. And then just as you're about to pull out, the snowplow comes through and puts all the snow back in your driveway again. And it's still beautiful, but holy cow. Well, anyway, she says, my son wants to become an astronaut. He's an eighth grader who's a top-notch in academics and physical fitness and a very nice kid to boot, I'm sure, Minnesota nice. Do you have any advice on what we can do to make inroads to the astronaut corps? What colleges, what major? And Lisa, what I'm going to tell you is what the astronauts have told me throughout my career. Go find something in science and math. First of all, just take those science classes and those math classes. Take the calculus. Do the high-end stuff as quickly and directly as you can, and then find something in science or engineering that you're interested in and stick to it and become the best at it that you can possibly be. Okay, become an expert in your field, whatever that is. It's got to be something that interests you. It's got to be something you're excited about. And whatever that is, physical science, chemistry, math, mechanical, aeronautical, whatever, become the best you can. And then they say, on top of all that, if you can learn how to program computers, C++, machine language, I mean, right at the guts of the thing, and you can combine all that and become very smart about that, you're on your way. In the same time, put yourself in opportunities to work as a team. Put yourself in opportunities to lead. Put yourself in opportunities to serve others. You know, you do those kind of things and become the well-rounded individual. Stay on top of the physical fitness. Stay on top of the schools. Good grades are a must. And maintain the focus and the dedication and the hard work no matter what comes your way. There's going to be all these distractions your eighth grader is going to find when he gets into high school and especially into college. That's going to want to pull you away from all that. maintain, persevere, and you've got a real shot at it. And as the space program grows, there's going to be more and more opportunities for more and more people. So there you go. I hope that's helpful. Kathy Winters, another question coming in. William from Palm Bay wanted to know about sort of the launch day pressures. And the scenario was, and of course, I remember very well the Ares 1X launch. And we kidded about tribal electrification and all that. But here you've got this rocket, this program, this so much of the future of our space program is riding on this rocket. Rightly or wrongly, that was the way it was being presented. And here you are in the hot seat. And really, the person that's going to tell us whether this rocket's going to go or no go, because technically everything's cool. And you've got this weird tribal electrification rule, the clouds, the charge, the, I mean, still don't understand it to this day. How does that feel? What's going through your head?
Well, you know, really when you get to launch day, you're so focused on the weather and the current day at hand and what you're doing specifically that day, counting down, getting to launch, evaluating the weather, that you're not thinking about the big program picture when it comes to what the scrub is going to mean and all that. What mm-hmm. you're really just focusing on is, what's the weather? Is there going to be a hole? We have a 4-hour window. I want to try and find where those holes are going to be and coordinate everything to where we'll be ready all at the same time mm-hmm. to launch at that time. But I'm not thinking about the pressure of the whole program at that time. I'm really just focused on the task at hand.
And do you, though? I mean, do you wind up, you know, at home that night and you go, woo?
Well, I guess after the scrub, even right after the scrub, you sort of take the big sigh.
Right.
Like, because usually when we scrub, there's been several launches where we've worked it right down to the end. And so you're working it and you're working it and you're working it. You're trying to get all the info to see if, is there a break? Is there a chance? Is there are we going to be green anytime here as we get to that point, to that T0? And when it's finally decided to scrub, you can finally kind of let it go and take the big breath.
Right.
And then get ready for the next day.
So is there a pill to take for go fever?
I don't know about that. We just have our constraints, you know, and we just focus on the constraints.
And more seriously, you are trying to make sure that it's right. You don't want it to fly until it's time.
Right.
So if it's go, it's go. And if it's no go, you have no qualms in saying it's no go.
Right. And what I say is weather is red. And then the call is made above my level on go or no go.
And that, I mean, and truly that is the way it is. And that's not trying to cop out or anything.
No,
you're giving the launch director the information he or she needs to whether the launch director think it's safe to fly or not.
Right. And that's why you hear me say weather has no constraints for launch or weather is red. And that's because that decision is not my decision to make. My decision to make is the weather, my team's decision. And then we just provide that information, and then their decision is to go or no go between the Air Force team and the Kennedy Space Center team.
And how are the weather rules these days? You know, we've joked through the years about flight rules being just guidance and not really, we shouldn't use the word rule. There is launch commit criteria that seems to be pretty black and white, but yet there are times when even on launch day we say, well, that's not exactly the intent, and we try to build in, you know, defenses against launch fever. On the weather side, your rules, how strict are they? You know, what have they gone through to get to the point where they become a rule?
Well, the rules are pretty hard and fast. They're black and white, you know, but what's not black and white is weather itself. So what you're always working is, what's the thickness of those clouds? Is there precipitation in those clouds? And that's where it gets a little bit more gray area, if you will. But if there's any uncertainty at all, then we are red for weather. So we always say we have to be clear and convinced that our LCC are not violated.
And you're pretty slick, I think, now on the timing and on the ability to communicate that. I mean, you can come right down to the last second, I think, now and say something's no go and put a stop to it.
Right, we can go down for a lot of our constraints, like wind constraints, we go down to 5 minutes, and then it's a forecast for T0. And then for the triggered lightning and natural lightning constraints, that we can call all the way down to 10 seconds.
Well, you know, it reminds me, and I mentioned to you I was going to tell this story, talking about John Madura. You know, there was this, I remember a launch where I was covering it, and he told this story later about, and John, forgive me for listening, I'm pretty sure it was you that did this, but you'll tell me if I was wrong. Where it all came down to, it was an unmanned launch, and it all came down to whether or not the cloud was transparent or not. So if you could, and I don't totally understand the rule, it probably had something to do with triggered lightning, but if you could see through the cloud, it was okay. You could see stars behind it or whatever. But that's an extremely subjective thing, and depending on where you are at the Cape and what your cross angle is, I assume all that stuff comes into play. So Colonel Maduro, John's in the new range control center, and you've got this little crow's nest that you can a little spiral staircase that goes up into a little crow's nest up above the roof, where, believe it or not, the weather guys can actually go outside and look at the weather.
Right.
Which is pretty a novel concept when you think about it, you know, for all your instrumentation.
Right.
So he goes up there, and if I understand the story correctly, if I remember correctly, it was before the weather squadron was really fully wired up inside the control center. The building had just opened, and they were just basically checking stuff out. Well, he goes up into, and he looks, and he sees that the cloud is transparent, and the window is coming to a close, and it's almost T0 time, and they have to pick up the count, and he sees it's go. And he's got no way to communicate that to anybody. And so he starts yelling down the stairway, go, go, we're go, we're go. And somebody at the bottom of the stairway hears him, and he yells down the hallway to the guy, we're go, we're go. And the guy at the doorway yells inside to the weather guy. And he says, we're go. And the guy says into his headset, we're clear to launch, you know. And bam, it went. You know, now I imagine it's not so crazy anymore like that, you know. And that was probably a very unique circumstance, But you're very well coordinated. And is everything in the launch? Is everything in the Range Operations Control Center now? I mean, that's where you're based.
Right, we're in the Range Operations Control Center.
Where do you have other people? Do you have people anywhere else?
Well, we do have one person out of the press site that's talking to the press.
Okay.
We have some folks, our military folks, are out of the TAL sites. But generally, we are talking to the aircraft, which is really the one that's giving the eyes in the skies information.
And those aircraft, they're. Is it a different team each time? And are you hiring those folks? Or
well, for the expendable launch vehicles, we have a contracted aircraft that we have a contract with, and then for shuttle, we use shuttle training aircraft and the T-38, the astronaut.
And they've gotten pretty smart about it. Not only the STAs, of course, but your contract folks, I've heard, they've gotten very very helpful.
Right, we actually provide them training, and we've actually been able to fly with them too, just to be able to get familiarization and also give them some more information that they might not have been realizing with the rules, and so that's been really helpful.
About a minute left here, Kathy. I wanted to ask you too. Now, in the big picture, and this gets to the civilian weather versus what's going on at the Cape. You know, people will look at the standard television weather forecast and get an idea of what's going on, and you know what the forecast is. People don't understand that you're forecasting for a very specific spot
right over
the Cape. Could you talk a little bit about that? We got about a minute.
Yeah, very specific spot. We're talking for launch, 10 nautical miles around a vehicle for launch commit criteria. It's 20 for the RTLS constraints, or return to launch site constraints. But when it comes to weather phenomenon, that's a very small area. You know, we have our grid points 50 or 100 miles apart, not that close together. So it's definitely a very specific phenomenon that we're looking at in a very small area. So people think, oh, the weather looks good for launch, or it doesn't look like too bad of a day. And we're looking at something totally different, maybe anvils coming in from thunderstorms over the Gulf Stream or something like that. So it's very, very specific criteria and location.
Wow. Okay, good. Well, we're going to take a last-minute break here. And when we come back, just a couple more questions with Kathy. We'll wrap up the day. This is Space Talk that you're listening to on WMMB. I'm Jim Banky. We'll be right back.
If it's happening in space, Jim Banky is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to our last segment here on Space Talk today, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. We're here with the 45th Weather Squadron Space Shuttle Weather Officer Kathy Winters. And Kathy, we've had a great conversation here going today. I wanted to ask you and talk a little bit about the expertise in the office. I remember in the earlier days, you know, you had Air Force folks, career Air Force folks, kind of being the point persons for doing weather, and you didn't have such a big civilian cadre out there. And the concern was is that people would keep getting transferred here every two years, which is normal for rotating for the Air Force. But we have such unique weather situation here on the Space Coast and the phenomenon, the sea breeze and all that. Could you talk a little bit about what is unique about our weather and how you guys have made changes in your staffing to sort of have this corporate knowledge stick around?
Sure. The 45th Weather Squadron has put lead launch weather officers in as civilian positions for each vehicle. So, for example, you'll hear Clay Flynn doing the Atlas launches. Joel Tumbiolo will do the Delta launches. And Mike McLean is our new Falcon launch weather officer. He's a civilian also. And we even have our radar specialist, Todd McNamara. So we're all certified launch weather officers as civilians. And so we can really build up a depth of knowledge that can stay with the squadron as the military launch weather officers come and go and military personnel. So we have both the good new ideas coming in when the military folks come in, but we also have the body of knowledge that can stay with the squadron given our civilian status.
That's great, Kathy. We got a question here from Sawyer from New Jersey listening in live online, and he asks, well, he basically wants to ask us where NASA should go in the future after the Augustine Commission's recommendations. And I know that is not your area, not your pay grade, but let me spin the question this way that maybe might be interesting to ask you. You know, we saw with Ares 1X and tribal electrification and all that, and we know that was a one-time shot because the rocket hadn't had some kind of a coating on it or something to make it less susceptible to static right. electricity discharge. What's the ideal rocket? What's the all-weatherproof rocket that you could go launch in a hurricane? You don't have to wait for the eye of the hurricane like in the movie Marooned. You know, is there such a beast out there?
Well, we hear about it all the time when both with aircraft and rockets, we're going to build this all-weather rocket, but I haven't seen it yet, and I'm not sure if it will ever happen, maybe someday.
Yeah.
But it'd have to be a rocket that could handle triggered lightning. It would have to be a rocket that could handle any wind condition.
Winds, hurricane force.
Coming off the pad with any kind of winds. And so it's pretty challenging to find an all-weather rocket.
And your research continues, though. I mean, not on the rocket side, but certainly on the weather phenomena. You get to know whether that rocket-triggered lightning rule is too conservative or not. You're able to change your rules based on your latest scientific findings.
Right. We actually have a team of people that do that. It's called the Lightning Advisory Panel, and they actually are the ones who created our lightning launch commit criteria. They're a team of lightning experts, and they are the ones who really have the knowledge to do that. Then we also have all kinds of research out there that we aren't in contact with, so we have the Applied Meteorology Unit that works with us. They're right there with us. And what they do is they'll transition any weather type research over into our operations. So we put in certain requests to them. They also give us certain ideas, and we can do that as well. So we're always trying to improve that.
Do the rules get harder, easier, or are there just more rules?
They actually get less conservative generally.
Okay.
It's very a few times that they've ever become more conservative. I can only think of one where we just change the definition of our cloud edge, and our radar definition of cloud edge. But generally what we're doing, we know our rules are conservative, but we don't know where that line is. And so the line is really drawn a little bit less conservative when we get enough data to show that we can do
wow.
that.
Okay, good. I want to thank you for being with us today. We're already actually out of time. I want to wrap up the show with some other quick notes here. But, Kathy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for the 45th Public Affairs Office for supporting the operation today, and we hope to have more folks from the wing on very soon. You, by the way, I think are the first person from the 45th Space Wing on Space Talk.
Wow.
So I need to give you, like, I don't know what. A badge or a coffee cup or something someday. So anyway, thanks, Kathy. Really appreciate you being on with us. Well, there goes Kathy Winters. And let me just wrap up by sharing a few things with you, a couple other bits of news I wanted to stick in here. First of all, I want to let everyone know, kind of on the Saturn note, two-time shuttle pilot and longtime NASA test pilot Gordon Fullerton had a major stroke New Year's Eve. He's out in California. He was undergoing an outpatient procedure when it happened, so he was thankfully immediately under care. But Fullerton, if you don't know the name, he's a household name in NASA, truly one of the greats in aviation and space. He helped fly the Space Shuttle Enterprise during the approach and landing tests in the 70s, often piloted the shuttle carrier aircraft that carries the shuttle back and forth on the 747. He was one of the NASA B-52 mothership pilots. Basically, he did everything and anything on the Dryden Flight Research Facility. I mean, if it had wings and a NASA logo on it, he flew it. And he retired in 2007 and had this stroke and is in pretty rough shape. So our prayers are with him and his family as he recovers. Also, on the political side this past week, Governor Crist came to town last Thursday. Haven't had a chance really to talk to anyone about it in specifics. But some of the things that he said were both interesting and non-committal. And so there was some talk about $3.2 million for job retraining, and I hope that money isn't just for helping people write their resumes. I hope that really has something to do with bringing in some new efforts, some new work for our folks as we deal with the retirements retirement of the shuttle program. But we're going to try to learn a little bit more about that here in the coming days and come back to you with some comments and questions about that. In the meantime, next week on Space Talk, my guest is going to be the newly elected chairman of the Coalition for Space Exploration, Glenn Mahone. Glenn was a former NASA official and now working with the contractors. And the Coalition is an industry group that is basically out there pro-space, out there doing their thing to make sure folks understand the importance of what NASA and the entire space exploration effort means to our country as a leader economically, politically, world, like I say, in terms of world leadership and all of that. So I was, by the way, very fortunate to be on the ground floor of forming that organization when I worked for the Space Foundation a few years ago, and continue to help wherever I can. So anyway, Glenn's going to be with us next week on Space Talk. We'll talk about the group's plans for 2010 and see what they're up to as well. The following week, Frederick Ordway, longtime space historian and worked with the German rocket team, knew Wernher von Braun very well. Kurt Diebus, our first director of the Kennedy Space Center, 82 years old. He will be our guest next week as he continues, or in 2 weeks as he continues to keep us informed about what's going on in space history. Got some interesting stories to tell. So that's going to just about wrap us up for the day. By the way, I want everyone to stay warm tonight. Enjoy. I had to take the last 50 seconds here and tell you to enjoy the football playoffs. My Minnesota Vikings have the bye this weekend, so we're just going to sit back and see what happens. There is a scenario out there where if certain things happen, the Vikings and the Green Bay Packers could play again as early as that first next week here, and that would be a media circus unlike any you have heard of. And by the way, if that wasn't bad enough, there's another scenario that says the Vikings and the Packers could play for the right to go to the Super Bowl. And on that weekend, I'm going to need help hosting this show. There's just no doubt about it. Well, thanks to all of you for listening today. Don't forget to stay in touch with us at WMMBAM, keyword Space Talk. Follow us on Twitter at Space Talking. Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.